south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Here's a question I get on occasion. This is from Chris. He says, hi, Johnny. Those teaching English jobs in Latin America, how much do they pay? Are they year-round? Do you get summers off? What about contracts and work permits? Thanks, Chris in Connecticut. Now, Chris, you see, there are actually four ways to teach English in Latin America. One, of course, is to answer one of those ads in one of the local Latin newspapers. The paper will be in Spanish, of course, but the ads will be in English. By the way, most of those English teacher job openings will be at what I call helicopter schools that pride themselves and actually do their marketing to their target, that would be wealthy parents with kids, by advertising to those parents that they have a high percentage of first world, genuine gringo, English speakers teaching English at their school. Which is why you don't have to know Spanish at all to teach at a school like that. And by the way, you probably won't be teaching just English. Since it'll be K through 12, you'll be teaching history and sociology and geography, etc., etc., all in English. In fact, I know one gringo English teacher who's been teaching 11 or 12 years now, and his Spanish still sucks. Why? Because his job from the start was to teach his classes all in English and speak to the kids around school in the hallways and such in English too. So parents are under the impression that having a number of first world gringos teaching there will turn their kids into little gringoized clones by proxy with no Spanish accents. And a lot of them do just that. In fact, I know quite a few upscale Latin families that send their kids to the helicopter schools, and the kids do speak nearly perfect English without any accent. And as it turns out, they almost always speak much, much better English than their own parents. Now, there are two main ways to get an English teaching job like that. You can look on the internet up in the States. Believe it or not, on the net they actually have English teacher headhunter agencies. Or better yet, come down to the Latin American city of your choice and check out the local newspapers in the classified help wanted sections. Yep, they still have printed newspapers and yellow pages here. Another thing they copied from the first world. Just look for the ads that say English teachers wanted. And they will really stand out because maybe only 1 in 50 ads is in English. Off the gringo tourist trail anyway. Now lately I've noticed a lot of ads of all different types will stick an English word or phrase in here and there. It's a fad and it's all the rage. Remember, we're in the land of gringo wannabes. In fact, now we're starting to see road signs and posters and buildings, billboards, street names, even names of businesses way off the gringo tourist trail that have shoved in a gringo word or two or even a phrase. Not that 99% of the local population gets what those English words mean, but to them, it's cool. In fact, the other day I was invited to a middle-class, guess what? Quinceañeros party. That's a girl's sweet 15 party. Wow, that was a trip. I'll have to tell you about that next show. But I'll mention one thing about that party now. Almost every single young guy in that place, remember, they're all 15, 16-year-olds now, and probably at least 60% of the young girls in that place had clothing items, hats, t-shirts, sweaters, jeans, whatever, that had English words or phrases on them. And of course, the kids knew nothing of what they said or really meant. Because these were middle and lower middle class kids. No bilingual helicopter school kids at this bash. But, as I've said in past shows, it's all the fashion down here to have English words and phrases on anything and everything. But I digress as usual, though not too far, because we're talking about English and English teachers. And what do they get paid in those helicopter schools? They start at about $400 to $500 a month. And generally, you're on a year-to-year contract. Now, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, a lot of times schools will make deals with teachers, paying them, let's say, half of that salary in cash or a check that might say portador on it, which means pay to the bearer, or it might say for services rendered. And the other half of that salary might be to you as a payroll check. And they do that as an incentive because they know you'll only pay taxes on the payroll check. So they are doing you a favor by helping you evade taxes. How do you like them apples? By the way, that happens almost always off the gringo tourist trail. On the gringo tourist trail, it's a little bit different. Why? Because on the gringo tourist trail, for example, in Costa Rica or Playa del Carmen, San Juan del Sur, whatever, There are just so many English-speaking gringos around. Schools have their choice of a huge English-speaking labor pool, so they don't have to make side deal incentives because it's a supply and demand issue, and there's a huge supply of English speakers. So bottom line, if you got any kind of college diploma at all, could be in English or geology, astronomy, biology, even totally useless degrees like art or psychology or drama, journalism, political science, business, African American studies, or phys ed. No matter, you're still a college-educated gringo and you're in demand in Latin America. You can easily get a job at a helicopter school, though the real big demand is off the gringo tourist trail. On the trail, forget about it. You got too much competition. And by the way, as much as Latins adore diplomas and certificates of any kind, don't bother to pack that Harry's A1 truck driving school diploma. It probably won't help, but on second thought, I could be wrong about that. By the way, if you're really on a low budget, backpacker style or whatever, there is an advantage to working at a helicopter school because they'll get your work permit and visa for you, and if you're there long enough, they'll even get you your residency. That'll be part of your contract package. Again, we're talking off the gringo tourist trail. By the way, what I'm explaining here is true whether it's in a giant Latin American city of 10, 20, even 30 million like Sao Paulo, Brazil, or Buenos Aires, Argentina, down to small Latin towns off the gringo tourist trail of 10 or 20,000 people. They still have high-end K-12 private schools in need of first-world gringo teachers. So you can be a teacher and live the city life, the medium-sized city life, or the very small-town life, too, and still support yourself in a very decent way on an English teacher's salary. And as far as the timeline and the teaching schedule, as it turns out, about a quarter of the private K-12 schools are on the same schedule as schools up in the first world, with June, July, and August off. Again, they're trying to be as gringoized as possible, so little by little, private schools are changing to that same format. Though most Latin private schools are still on the usual Latin schedule, which is reverse of the first world. Their summer during our winter up north. In other words, they get a huge 3-month-long Christmas vacation. They call that their summer vacation because it's summer down here then. And that starts in the middle of October, and they go back to school for the new year around the middle of January. So their new school year doesn't start in September, it starts in January. Now note that all Latin public schools, and that's where about 95% of all Latin kids go, they of course go by the traditional Latin school year. And by the way, I call these upscale private school helicopter schools because a lot of the parents have helicopters and some of the kids are actually dropped off at school in the morning by helicopter. So I guess one of the differences is up north you've got no helicopters, but you've got metal detectors at the schools, and down here, no metal detectors, but plenty of heliports. Does that make sense to you? I guess nothing makes sense anymore, huh? But of course, not all private schools are that upscale. There are lower scale private schools that have no helicopter kids at all. And they have no real first world gringo teachers either. Why? Because they can't afford to pay them twice what they pay the regular native teachers. We gringos come at a higher price, you know. But no matter, even a town of 10 or 20,000 will have a very high-end private school or two. Even rather small towns have wealthy people who want to send their kids to a high-end bilingual school. And those are the schools that will want to hire you, the first world, perfect English-speaking gringo. So they might start you out at $400, even $600 a month. And every year your contract's renewed, they'll bump you up quite a bit. In fact, I know a couple of gringo English teachers who've been teaching at their schools 10 years or more, and one of them makes around $1,200 a month, and the other makes around $1,500 a month, which really is big money down here. In fact, the one guy bought himself a nice piece of land, built himself a nice house, and he goes on Latin American vacations all the time. And he's got an adequate car, too. Nothing spectacular, but not a junk either. Whereas if he made that kind of money up in the States, he'd be in the poverty class and on food stamps for sure. Oh, and by the way, some of the first world English teachers will take that summer and do some tutoring. As one English teacher friend of mine told me, there are always some unattentive dunces with low grades in those helicopter schools, and their parents are glad to pay for a real bona fide 100% gringo teacher to come to their house for a few hours a week, and often it's a mansion with bodyguards, etc. And they'll invite the gringo English tutor over to teach or pretty much babysit their spoiled, entitled, underachieving dunce. Now, my gringo English teacher friend charges around $20 to $25 an hour for that service. And these rich kids' parents are willing to pay just about anything, he says, so their kid doesn't fall behind and have to repeat the year. If that were to happen, it's a big social faux pas in Latin America, especially with the upper classes, where bad news and rumors travel at the speed of light. In fact, one of my gringo helicopter school teaching buddies tells me some teachers make just as much money tutoring as they do on their real teaching jobs. And it's true, a lot of gringos and expats who come down here first as teachers in private schools, they end up, after 6 months or so, finding their own niche and starting their own businesses. I'd say that happens to about half the people that come down here who first started by teaching English. In other words, a lot of those gringo teaching jobs turn out to be perfect stepping stones, even a launch pad to a real entrepreneurial career. Especially for those gringos who come down knowing they absolutely have to work eventually, but don't know what kind of business they want to start. Now, one of my gringo teacher buddies estimates that about 50% of the gringo teachers he knows end up starting their own businesses after a while and getting out of teaching altogether, usually after a year or so. Now, he taught at 3 different helicopter schools over the last 14 or 15 years, so he's known maybe 100 or more gringo and gringa teachers in that time, so he's got a good sample. And the other 50% of gringo teachers that stay on, like him, find being a first-world gringo teacher at a helicopter school is an easy life. Because, you see, they too have that gringo advantage going for them, and believe it or not, unlike if you teach at a very wealthy school up in the States, down here, you are not considered a lesser person or the hired help. In fact, just the opposite. You've got that gringo advantage, and oftentimes, wealthy parents and kids will take you under their wing, and you'll get invited to all kinds of special events, and you'll even get to fly in those helicopters once in a while. In fact, one gringo teacher friend of mine mentioned to his class that he needed to put up a fence, and guess what? 2 weeks later, a truck showed up, and a fence appeared. Turns out, one of the kids' dads owns a chain of hardware stores and a construction company. Now, that's what I call the gringo advantage. You see, down here, unlike the teaching profession up in the States, so often because you're a gringo and you're teaching their precious little kids, you're an equal to the parents who might be fantastically wealthy cement, sugar, or perhaps coffee, teak, and pineapple plantation owners, etc. Or they might just be people who squandered 100 years of their family's wealth and are up to their ears in debt and just putting on a show. Sometimes you just don't know. But whether it's real or a big show, these are people with summer houses, beach houses, boats, and even sometimes houses in Miami. In fact, I remember 2 separate times when I was visiting one of my English teacher buddies on a Saturday at his house. We were sitting on the porch and a black bulletproof SUV pulled up. The bodyguards got out and a couple of kids came over just to visit. Turns out they'd rather hang on weekends with their favorite gringo teacher because, you know, there's a huge shortage of gringos off the gringo tourist trail. And surely, gringo teachers are probably the only gringos these kids ever really get to meet. That said, believe it or not, there are times they'd rather hang out on the porch with their gringo teacher at his little 1,000-square-foot house than hang out at the elaborate beach house with the pool and the jet skis and the ATVs. I guess that gets boring after a while, right? I hear stories like that from my English teacher buddies all the time. Oh, and here's another incident like that. One of my English teacher buddies mentioned in class that he was looking to get a dog. And within a couple of days, there were kids already offering him puppies. And he ended up taking, as a gift from one of the kids, a breeding pair of Rhodesian Ridgebacks, a breed I'd never heard of, neither did he. Of course, they had papers and their parents were show winners. So, these puppies were worth at least $1,000 apiece. Turns out the kid's mom bred them for a hobby, which meant nothing to my buddy. He would have taken a mutt. He's just a laid-back gringo who came down as a backpacker many years ago. When you hear stories like that, you realize gringo teachers down here really do get the kind of respect that teachers up in the first world just never get anymore. So, up in Minneapolis and Cleveland, it might be an apple for the teacher, though I doubt the teacher would take a bite because it might be poisoned. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, an apple to impress the teacher? Come on, that would be an insult. Instead, it could be any number of cool things, a custom-installed fence, a weekend at the beach house, or a pair of Rhodesian Ridgebacks worth a couple of grand. Which is why I understand about half the gringo teachers never do get those outside jobs and look for any other career because, well, they too find they've got that gringo advantage and are treated like B-grade rock stars. And as my friend always says, it's hard not to get used to that. But then he says you have to put up with the downside and look the other way at the racist, classist parents. And that, of course, rubs off on their children, too. Now, the second way to get an English teaching job in Latin America is just to tutor. Again, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, that's not going to be very easy to pull off. Way too much gringo competition. But when you're off the gringo tourist trail, all you have to do is market yourself in the right upscale neighborhoods, starting with putting a slick ad up on those supermarket bulletin boards I'm always talking about. Write the ad in English and Spanish, and if you don't know any Spanish, have someone write that part for you. Then emphasize that you're a first-world gringo who's an expert in polishing a person's English conversational skills and toning down their Spanish accent. Down here, everyone wants to speak English without a Spanish accent. The fainter the accent, the higher class you're perceived to be. Here's something that'll drive that point home. Every so often on TV, there'll be an interview with a Latin celebrity, a TV or soap opera star, whatever. So they're big stuff down here in Latin America, but total unknowns up in the States. Now, occasionally the interviewer will ask this. Now that you're a huge star in Latin America, when are you going to go to the States and try to break into English-speaking Hollywood? Because you see, for Latin stars and celebrities, Hollywood is beyond the gold standard, like reaching for the moon. Even though most first-worlders with a brain know that most people in Hollywood are brain-dead, pustulant Kardashianoids. And the answer is always the same. No matter how big you are in Latin America, you'll never break into the U.S. media, the Anglo-American Hollywood media, if you speak English with an accent. In fact, only a handful, maybe three or four Latin stars, have ever done that. Lightning does strike once in a while. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, we were talking about English tutoring. Well, bottom line on that. Upscale parents are willing to pay to have their kids' English polished so that they speak more perfect Anglo-Gringo English. So then how much can you make hiring yourself out as an English tutor? Well, if you notice the bulletin boards in high-end districts where they have high-end malls and such, occasionally you'll see an English tutor ad posted, but it's usually a pathetic piece of marketing because it's an English-speaking Latin putting up the ad. And the way you'll do it, of course, is you'll put right up front and center that you're a gringo from the first world, and you're going to teach them how to polish their English and speak like a real gringo, with an emphasis on proper conversational English and gringo business English. That'll grab them. And if the students come to you, you can charge 10 to 15 bucks an hour, and if you go to their home, 20 to 25 bucks an hour. And by the way, after a while, word will get around the neighborhood, and you'll have their friends and family calling you for tutoring, too. Provided you don't get caught stealing their silverware. And by the way, the maid will probably cook dinner for you once in a while, too. Yes, that happens all the time. And by the way, I know a gringo who only teaches 2 days a week, and he makes plenty enough dough, he says, to live a first world life. Now, there is another way to teach English, too, and that would be in the medium and large-sized Latin cities who have call centers. You see, call centers are always looking for real first world gringos to polish up the actual slugs on the phone with their headsets. Now, these big call center outfits really want their call center grunts to speak English as perfectly as possible, and they're never going to accomplish that unless they hire first-world gringos to give on-site classes. Now, when you see them advertising for call center grunts in the local newspapers, they say right there in black and white, you only need to have 70 to 80% English fluency. So who do you think trains them up to 90% or more? And who'll be teaching them commonly used gringo telephone social skills? That would be someone like you. And what do those jobs pay? Probably $800 to $1,200 a month. Now, the last most common way to teach English in Latin America is to get hired at one of those English teaching academies. They're all over the place down here, especially in the large and medium-sized cities. Franchises like Berlitz and Harmony and Oxford, etc. And they pay $5 to $10 an hour, but almost none of them ever give you more than 20 hours a week. And gringos I know who have worked those places don't last long. They say the management usually screws them out of hours and time. Okay, that said, let's change gears a bit. If you remember just a few shows ago, I talked about credit cards and quick loans and loan sharks in Latin America. Well, here's a related article that ties into all that. And it's all about how Latin Americans, without the dough, finance their way through coyotes to get into the U.S. illegally. Now, we hear numbers like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, even $10,000 to pay a coyote to get you there safely. And you have to wonder, how do these dirt poor people finance that stuff? How is it possible for them to come up with that kind of cash? Well, here's an article that kind of tells it all, and here's the title. Illegal immigrants rack up debts to chase their dreams and have few options when things go wrong. And I'll paraphrase this. It starts out, Anibal Salazar drives a cab at night in Guatemala's second largest city, Quetzaltenango. He has 4 children and last year took out a $2,600 loan against a piece of land he owns in order to pay a people smuggler, a coyote, to take him to the U.S. Salazar was one of a group of 5, each paying the same amount. For many who attempt the journey, the cost is much higher and fees exceeding $6,000, even $10,000 are common. And it works like this. Generally, the agreement for these trips is that one gets three chances to cross the border with a coyote. So you pay the dough and you get three shots at it. However, in his case, he was intercepted in Reynosa, Mexico, near the border with the U.S., and his companions and him were returned to Guatemala. A few days, however, before the group was to make the second run, Salazar was hit by a car and hospitalized and unable to rejoin his comrades. He now has a debt payment he struggles to pay each month. He says he pays the coyote's lender $150 a month for the debt, but he only earns around $400 a month in his taxi. Plus, he says he pays $60 a week to rent the taxi. And he's got more than 2 years of monthly payments to the coyotes before his debt is retired. So the question remains, how can Latin governments, or any government, police an out-of-control system that's inherently illegal? A spokesperson for the Public Ministry Enforcement Unit, Francisco Cotton, he says Latin Americans just do not file complaints against coyotes. Duh, I wonder why. That's me. Boy, what an idiot. He belongs in government, huh? Anyway, he says without formal complaints, the agencies can't investigate. Any kind of complaint against an illegal activity often reveals a much bigger problem. He cited a case of fraud that led to catching an operation's ringleaders who had scammed over 100 people with the promise of Canadian work visas. All right, let's stop for a second. It's me again. Now, you might remember I mentioned in a past show, maybe a year or so ago, that I saw ads all over Latin newspapers myself showing a nice, tailored, first-world couple all dressed up, offering seminars on the weekends that were 4 hours long, by the way, promising Canadian work visas and Canadian residency permits. They were playing to standing room only in hotel salons all throughout Latin America at $50 a head. So scams like that do abound. Okay, back to the article. Complicating matters further, judges in Latin America have been denying fraud cases focused on payments to coyotes. Then it says the only tool Latin states have is the national crime of usury. That is, charging interest rates higher than the rates approved by the national banking authorities. Then it says prosecuting most of these cases is futile because notaries make changes when they draft these documents so that the illegal usury part, those illegally high interest rates, are disguised as the capital or principal. That is, for example, if they're lending $2,500, but they write it up as $5,000, and that base of $5,000 is what the interest is calculated on, when the amount lent was really only half that, or $2,500, they can hide double the interest in that document. Then it goes on to say, while few people file any complaints at all, the issue of extra high interest rate migrant debt is widespread throughout Latin America. In fact, it says 75 to 80% of all migrants surveyed have paid coyotes to take them or their family members to the United States. Wow, did you get that? 75 to 80%. I guess that's why 1 in 4 people born in Mexico are now living illegally in the U.S. Then it says nearly a quarter of these people paid coyotes more than $6,000. Some 80% took out loans in order to pay smugglers, and nearly 40% obtained these loans from informal lenders and loan sharks. And this is the part that'll kill you. It says, the reason so many turn to loan sharks is they don't meet banking financial institution requirements for a loan. Yeah, right. Like you're going to go to a bank and say, hey, I need $4,000 because I'm going to sneak into the United States illegally. Can you make the loan? Well, don't laugh. Latin banks actually do make loans like that. Especially if the guy or gal or the family has land or a house or some collateral like cows, for example. Then it says, most who try to attempt to reach the U.S. illegally will fail and will try again, often several times. These efforts will put families into greater debt because they'll pool their resources and they'll consume what assets they have before the so-called debt/migration cycle begins. A government spokesperson said, basically, this is an issue of organized crime where there are illegal coyotes, illegal moneylenders, and illegal recruiters. Loan contracts are often written as purchase agreements, putting borrowers at additional risk, since they have legally sold their land or their homes to the coyotes for the trip. In fact, coyotes often employ their own recruiters to find people who've got homes or land or cattle, anything of high value, so they can offer to collateralize it in their pitch when they offer to smuggle a person into the States. And it turns out the monthly interest on these coyote loans ranges from 5 to 20%, with 10% being the most common rate. Official financial institutions often offer alarmingly high rates as well, at least partially because of lack of regulations and oversight. So whether you finance it through the coyote and his moneylender or through an official financial lending institution, the average interest rate's around 120% a year. And it's not only banks that are lenders. In a recent report in Contra Poder magazine, they say that one rapid loan service called Chepe Te Presta, which, by the way, translates to Joe will lend you. I like that. And they charge the interest equivalent of 4 times the amount they lend, along with terms that can involve the right to seize any collateral without a warrant. So then you might be thinking, what about the guy who's leaving for the United States permanently? Isn't he the worst risk of all? I mean, he's gone, right? Well, if it involves a bank or a legitimate lending institution like, for example, Joe will lend you, the traveler or his family will be putting up a lot of collateral in case he skips. And if the coyote himself is the lender, or a local loan shark is the lender, they won't shell out the dough till they have a meeting with the traveler and his family at his house. Then, they'll check out the available assets and make sure they get plenty of co-signers. And if the payments stop, the enforcers come in. Now, according to researcher Sandra Shuk-Norado from the Latin American Department of Social Sciences, she says there's virtually no legal oversight in these cases, and thus few grounds for lawsuits. She says, quote, I try to identify, to find a law, some government body that regulates excessive interest rates, but I never did find one. Such laws do exist in certain Latin American countries, but I'm unaware of where to find them, what they say, and what exactly they are. However, she said she found the cheapest interest rates were from 10 to 30% a year with credit unions, but only for workers belonging to that union. And she says lenders know that if borrowers make it to the U.S., they will repay that money. And as for all those loans from banks and legitimate lenders to pay for coyotes, the paperwork has to state the reason for the loan, but it's not stated clearly. However, bank loan officials are well aware the money's going to be used to immigrate to the U.S. illegally. Okay, we're getting to the end now, so don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com and check out expert blogger John Galt and all the special things he's got for you on that site. And don't forget to go to my Expat Files YouTube channel and check out the slides that go along with the audio. Do subscribe. It's free, you know. And by the way, VWYF.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.